And welcome back. R.L. Poole with us. We talk about Edward Leete Scanlon and Coral Castle. And how about we take your calls as well? Fascinating, fascinating subject. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with R.L. Poole, as we talk about Coral Castle. How big is the structure, R.L.?
The entire structure?
Yeah, around the Coral Castle area.
It's about an acre.
Well, that's not bad.
No, it's actually really nice. It's actually set on more land than that, but the actual Coral Castle itself takes up about an acre of land.
What did Ed do for a living to make money?
Well, he, for a while, he raised vegetables and stuff and would sell them. He, of course, would give tours of his, what he called Rock Gate Park at the time.
Of course, I wonder what 10 cents was in those days, right?
Right. And then he also would sell his written works, his pamphlets, his scientific works.
On magnets and stuff like that.
Right. He had a correspondence. He took out an ad where you could correspond with him, and he asked you to send him a $1 bill, and then he would send you his written works.
Maybe he made a lot of money.
I thought very highly of them because that was a dollar back then.
Oh, that was a lot of money. That's like, what was it, $10 today?
Yeah, about, I would say.
Was he likable?
You know, I think that there was a kind of a weird veneer to Ed that I think some people kind of poked fun at or was made uncomfortable by. But so many people said that he was a quiet, polite, gentle soul. And that he was very meek, and unless he was talking about the castle, and then he would become very animated and very excited. But I don't know anybody who ever said Ed did anything wrong to them, ever.
Well, that's a pretty good testament, isn't it?
It is.
And how old was he when he died, do you know?
He was 64.
64, yeah.
Yeah, he died December 7th, 1951, at 64 years old. 16 plus 16 plus 16 plus 16.
It sounds like he didn't have a lot of friends, though.
No, I think that that was purposeful on his part. I think he wanted to be alone with his thoughts. And I think that Ed spent a lot of time in his younger life being misunderstood by people. And I think he just realized that he would be in better company to be alone.
Let's take some calls here for you. We'll go to Joe in the Bronx to get things started. Hi, Joe.
George, how are you?
Great.
I wanted to speak to R.L. Poole about, you mentioned the Star Spica. Could that be instrumental in that, coupled maybe with the Earth's magnetic core, could that be instrumental in helping to lift these heavy stones? I mean, as far as star power or star energy is concerned. Could you have found
what
a way?
I believe was that Spica was the clue to lead you to the constellation wall, the east wall of the Coral Castle. And then all of those alignments that he shows on the wall, including Spica, I believe the celestial alignments are the key. He talks about in Magnetic Current how sphere magnets, how you can do certain things with sphere magnets. And what are celestial objects? They are large sphere magnets, aren't they? Big, heavy, dense, magnetic objects.
How did he know
around in space?
R.L., how did he know so much about celestial objects?
Well, I'm not sure. They did say that he spent a lot of time at the library. He read voraciously. Obviously, from what he said, he was obsessed with the pyramids in Egypt, and the Egyptians were obsessed with celestial alignments. And I think that he noticed, rightly so, that celestial alignments and megalithic structures are inexorably linked to one another and cannot be separated. So I believe that, and on this day that he shows on the wall, Venus, the Sun, the Moon, and the Earth are all aligned in a perfectly straight line with the celestial equator, the ecliptic equator, and all of these celestial objects are in a straight line like billiard balls, in a straight line with each other. and it's also during a total eclipse. I don't think that that's a coincidence that that's the time he shows on the wall, and I don't think it's a coincidence that it happens in 1923, the same year he built the castle, and it's also the same exact time he put in stone forever in his own castle. I don't think these are coincidences.
Can we say that there is no humanly possible way that he physically moved those stones and those blocks?
As of this moment, yes, it is true. And there are people out there who are trying to do it in the old way that Ed did it. And so far, no one's even come.
And they have to do it by themselves.
Right. And there was a guy, his name's Wally Wallington. I'm sure you probably know him, George.
Yeah.
He showed how you're able to move, like, very large pieces of stone with pebbles. Here's the problem. That's concrete. He didn't have to cut that out of the earth. That was poured on top of the land. And you might be able to move it sideways a few feet and this and that, but how do you get down and cut a block out of the earth, lift it up,
pull it out,
and then move it?
That's right.
See? And then once you get it out, how do you stack it? And how do you stack them so high, like the obelisk?
Do you think he might have had some extraterrestrial help?
I have to tell you, I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility. I looked at one of the postcards that I bought from the Coral Castle Museum gift shop, and on there, it's Ed standing in front of the large crescent, just standing there looking off into space, and in the front of the picture, at the bottom right, there are these strangely humanoid-looking shadows that do not belong there. As soon as I saw it, my eye went right to it. I said, these are not shadows. There's nothing to make that shadow there, because I've been to the castle several times, and I know exactly where he was standing. And there's nothing to cause these very distinctive humanoid-looking shadows. And I always wondered, did he take a picture of his friends while he was there?
He might have, knowing him.
And I have to tell you, I think that this is what's been happening all along. I think that the gods in Egypt were ancient travelers who came here and shared their secret. To them, it's probably Boy Scout technology.
Well, he knew the secrets of the pyramids. Frank in Hollywood, Maryland, welcome to the show. Hi, Frank.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you.
Thank you.
I was just wondering if Mr. Skolnick had can you put a patent on a scientific, like E equals M squared? I mean, to what extent can you come up with a patent? I mean, he would have become the wealthiest man in the world, but he would have probably caused a lot of jobs to be forgotten about. But to what extent is science and a patent...
Well, I think if you've developed something, you can put a patent on that. But I'm not sure the formula of E equals MC squared could have been patented. RL, what do you think?
Well, I think it's the difference between an invention and an idea, I think, is what we're trying to make the distinction of here. And if it's a scientific discovery, instead of a patent, what you get is credit. But actually, Ed did have some things he submitted to the patent office, and it actually got rejected. But as far as his ideas, and I think that the reason that he didn't come out with his ideas was because he spent his life trying to understand what he had figured out. Ed was not a highly educated man. English was not his first language.
Why did he keep the secrets to his breast, though, so close? Why didn't he just publicize it and tell everybody?
Well, and that's what I think, that he was trying to fully understand it before he put it out. Because I think that in his mind, if he had said, look, I figured out, look what I can do, and look how I do it, but he didn't really understand how it worked, that it could be taken away from him or that it could be abused. These clues are left for someone who's very determined,
right,
and paying attention. And I think that he set the bar very high for someone to figure this out, that he wanted, the person who figures this out is going to be of the intelligence that they wouldn't abuse it.
Let's go to Colleen in Alamogordo, New Mexico. Good morning, Colleen.
Hi.
Hi there. Yep.
Okay. I want to discuss the universe being magnetic. Well, stars initially have a sound frequency. And if that sound frequency with magnetism and math together, that could that create the tie that he is discussing?
I'm not sure.
Because that could be very good concerning the sound frequency from a star and equaling that with mathematically how gravity is used upon that of the Earth.
Well, how would he
and
have,
then making that mathematical connection?
How would he have discovered the sound of that star?
Well, there are stars within the universe that have different sounds. Dwarfs have different sounds. Our star has different sounds. And there are items that they point at the star, and it gives a representation of a hum.
But okay. I'm not sure he had that kind of equipment.
Well, there's equipment, I believe, that they have at NASA where they can listen to stars literally.
Yeah, but you're talking about a guy from the 1920s. Well, let me check in with you, RL. I don't think he had high technology, did he?
No, he didn't. There are radio telescopes, of course, and that they have detected the frequency of stars.
But he didn't have that kind of equipment.
But he didn't have that ability. But here's something interesting about radio frequency, though. If you refer back to Rusty McClure's book, America's Stonehenge, he talks about a story in there where the military came and spoke to Ed. I can't believe I've never heard this story before, but when I read it, I was in the car on the way home from the Coral Castle reading the book, and I read this, and I was like, oh, my God, stop the car. The military came and spoke to Ed, the Air Force, because something Ed was doing was interfering with their communications.
Now, that's interesting.
Now, when they came there to see him, he took him around and showed him his antenna and his radio setup and all those things, and they kind of just said okay and left him alone. But what I realized was you don't interfere with communications by receiving a signal. You interfere with communications by producing one. And it must have been on a frequency that jammed one or more of their frequencies. And that put me on to the theory of, I believe what he was doing was a combination of electricity, magnetism, and radio frequency.
Whatever it was, he has learned it from a long time ago.
Yes. Yes, that what he has learned is ancient. And the technology, you could have done it back in the Egyptian times.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about it.
Because it's simple technology to make what they call a foxhole or a crystal radio. It's very simple technology. You can build it out of a pencil and a rusty razor blade and a bit of wire. I mean, they're not hard to make.
Let's go to Lynn in Vancouver, Canada for you. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call, George. Hi, RL.
Hello.
I'm fascinated by this. I want to speak to the magnets and the magnetism. And we're all magnetic. I have a couple of short points and then a quick question, and I'll take my answer off the air.
You got it.
So it started to remind of a book I heard about written somewhere in the late 1960s, and it was called Gravity is Push. And I believe it was by a professor out of Berkeley. I can't recall the exact, but the book, I remember the name being Gravity is Push, and that's one quick comment. Now, the other thing in regards to just the construction method with the levitation and figuring out the magnetism and vibration, blah, 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 I remember traveling on the bus. This is several years ago. And, you know, you see the construction guys at the end of their day. They're all dusty and head to toe. You know who they are. They're building another great skyscraper in Vancouver. And so I got to sit with the guy because it was the last seat. And I said, oh, you look like you've been having fun all week, Friday. And he says, oh, yeah, we've, you know, I said, are you building one of the big ones? And he goes, oh, yeah. And I said, how do you like it up tall, or do you get to go up there? And he goes, well, you know, I don't mind it so bad. He goes, but, you know, we do talk about all those ancient building techniques where it was all levitation and not so backbreaking. I'm not kidding. They speak amongst themselves about the ancient levitation. So that was my second comment. My third, well, the question is, now you talk about, you know, that his ideas about magnets and we're all a magnetic universe is sort of like his grand unification theory solution. And I'm just wondering, we have dark matter today, which is what, 97% of everything.
Sure.
And as far as I'm concerned, that would make dark matter sort of one mega uber omni magnet. I don't know how big you want to go with this, but I was just curious, would Ed have known, or is it in his writings, anything that would even come close to what we now call dark matter?
Okay, and before you answer that, RL, was the book Gravity Is a Push? Because it was a fellow by the name of Walter Wright who wrote it back in 1979.
Oh, well, that, yeah, Gravity Is Push, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so it's 1979, not the late 60s.
Right. Walter Wright wrote it. But what do you think of dark matter, RL? We've got a minute left before the break.
Well, I think that Ed would highly agree with her statement that when I heard them say dark matter, I said they're catching on to Ed. Because it is the ocean in which we swim. It comprises everything. Magnetism is everything. It's like we don't know we're wet. Fish don't know they're wet because they're constantly surrounded by water. We don't realize we're magnetic because we're constantly swimming in it. And I think that that is what dark matter is.
Somehow, some way, this guy was able to pick up on this kind of information and carry it with him. And I've got to tell you, that is as perplexing as how he moved those stones. How did he get this information? That's what I want to know.
I think that he got it the way I'm trying to get it now, by observing the people before me who did it.
That could be. Well, stay with us. R.L. Poole with us. Those of you on hold, we'll get to you. We're taking phone calls here in our final segment on Coast to Coast AM. And don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. Okay, welcome back. R.L. Poole with us. We'll get to your calls as well in our final segment here. R.L., when is your book finished? I'd love to talk with you about it when it's done.
Well, thank you. I'd love to come back and talk to you about it. I'm in the process of writing it right now, and I'm in the market for a publisher. So as soon as I get it finished, I'd love to get in contact with you and be a guest on the show again, because I'm having just too much fun right now talking about the Coral Castle.
When you were first down there for the very first time, was it, did it give you shivers?
It was a little overwhelming for me.
Because you knew a lot about it before you went down there, right?
I did. I had done, well, I knew a lot of what people had said. I'll put it that way. The first time I went kind of like a child, with just open eyes and just taking it all in and no preconceived notions. And when I did that, I was overwhelmed by the amount of work and the precision and the dedication and, I think, a little bit the loneliness that had to come from doing that work.
Whenever I'm in a spot that is historical, I try to think about the actual events that occurred there, and I try to picture them. And I could only, and I've not been there at Coral Castle, but I could only imagine what it was like to picture someone like Ed Leeds Skolnin walking around, moving these stones, and doing what he did. That was amazing, I bet.
You know, I think that that is the answer to the question you asked me earlier when you said, what would I ask Ed? You know, I don't think I would ask him anything. I would just observe him. I would just watch him being himself.
And that brings up another interesting question. Outside of those two kids that spotted him, how come nobody just went there and watched? I mean, the place was, it's out in the open, right? There were no walls hiding him or anything like that.
Well, he put up walls when he got there. In fact, that was part of his job.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, so the walls are actually made of the coral from Homestead. And the quarry is actually still open and right beside the coral castle. And you can see how he cut them out like pieces of cake.
How tall are the walls?
They are, I want to say, 7 to 8 feet tall, about 4 to 5 feet wide, and about as thick.
Jeez.
Every single one is a chunk, a large chunk of coral.
And he put them right in place.
He did, and what something interesting he did with the walls was he left the wedge marks in the coral.
Hmm.
I don't know if that fascinates anyone else, but it fascinates me to no end, because in no other pieces on the coral castle are there any wedge marks.
Why did he do that?
I think he left them there as another clue, because when you look at the wedge marks, they aren't the kind of marks that you do from traditional stone masonry. He used really thin, flat, wide wedges, the worst wedges in the world to use for breaking rock. And then there's slide marks in the coral, like it was like mud. There's displacement that is shown from all of these wedges going in, one after another, and they're all displacing the material.
Was he sloppy?
I'm sorry?
Was he a sloppy construction guy?
You tell me. I think you know the answer to that question. Ed was very detail-oriented and quite the perfectionist. He left those there on purpose. There was no other reason, because Ed wasn't that kind of guy, and you know that as well as I do.
Right.
He left that there, again, another clue, I think, that stares us in the face and begs us to pay attention, that he is telling us, when I did this, this was soft. This was like clay. He put these in the coral like you put a toothpick into a pumpkin pie, like you knock down a yard sale sign in your front yard. This was easy. He was a 100-pound man. You're going to tell me he took a sledgehammer and was pounding steel wedges into solid bedrock?
The hammer was bigger than him.
There's no way he could do it. I make two of Ed, and there's no way I could do it. I couldn't. I literally can't do it, and I haven't seen anybody else able to do that task either.
Well, let's go to the phones. Jeff in Culver City. Hey, Jeffrey, go ahead.
Hi, George and Mr. Poole. Yes, I'm so glad that you guys mentioned how connecting with certain frequency levels can possibly result in the movement of objects. An earlier Coast to Coast program with Mr. William Bill Burns briefly mentioned that particular attuned frequency levels will have certain individuals connecting with the dead. You know, he called it the spirit phone created by the great Nikola Tesla and Thomas Edison.
Mm-hmm.
But here in Los Angeles, California, we have the Watch Towers built by a man named Simon Rodea. And it's an upright vertical structure similar to the Leaning Tower of Pisa, Italy, where he was from, I was informed by Donna, your call screener, and the Eiffel Tower, you know, of Paris, France. But it's built just out of cement, different refuse, glass, bottle caps, and other assorted metallic materials. But my question is, Mr. Poole, why are individuals like these gentlemen building these type of structures? Is it because they've been given guidance by God to, you know, to try in their minds reach God by building these towering structures? And I'm asking it from a spiritual standpoint, and I take your answer off there.
Well, have we lost you, RL? Yep, let's do it again. We'll try to get you back for the final round here of taking calls. But let's go to Annie in Alabama. Hey, Annie, welcome to the show. It's you and me, Annie.
Got to be some way someone can contact this man through dreams or through some kind of communication with the dead.
I wonder if he's reincarnated.
You know, I know a lot. I've been working on this same thing myself for years. I studied leverage. We've got the inclined plane, the pulley, the pry bar, the wheel, the ball bearings.
Well, you never know. So, RL, I don't know if you heard all of that, but she's wondering if somebody could try to reach Edward Lead Scullin through some kind of a session, some kind of medium session or something, a seance. Who knows?
Well, the name of my channel on YouTube is Talking to Lead Scullin, and I've had people actually ask me this question before of, do I feel like that he speaks to me? And that isn't really what the name of the channel means. It simply means speaking on the subject of Lead Scullin. But I believe that you have to be sensitive to what you're studying. And I believe that the Coral Castle has been whispering, Ed has been whispering for a long time, and it has gotten drowned out by folklore and tall tales and legends, but the truth is still being whispered behind that cacophony, and that you have to be sensitive enough to hear the whisper over the screens.
True enough. Lewis in New Mexico. Go ahead, Lewis. Take it away.
Yes. The Torah, if you read the Torah, in small symbols above the literature are musical notes. Remember, King David played the lyre. And remember the walls of Jericho. They fell down.
Mm-hmm.
Also remember this.
With trumpets, right?
Yes. And if you remember this, all of Africa has no stone structures except for northern Egypt. The common denominator is Jerusalem. Ethiopia, where the Queen of Sheba was, is the only place besides Egypt that has in that area those big stone structures. The pyramids were built by Imhotep, who was Joseph. And they did this with these frequencies that can be found in the Torah.
You might be right about that. There might be a little guide there for us, RL. You know, we both have talked about sound resonance. Maybe he's onto something.
Well, you know, when he was talking about that, I couldn't help but think about a hammer. A hammer can be a tool to build, or it can be a tool to destroy.
That's right.
And that resonance, it can probably work against you as much as it can work for you. And so when you think about the trumpet sound with the Ark of the Covenant as some kind of amplifier, possibly overwhelming the resonance structure of the wall and cause it to fall, it could be exactly the same way as the pyramids of Egypt and the Coral Castle were built, through some type of resonant frequency, but if you overdo it, then it becomes destructive.
Catherine's with us, San Luis Obispo, California, west of the Rockies. Good morning, Catherine.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I want to thank you guys for a really engaging show.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
It's a great topic.
Yeah, it goes all over the place. For me, anyway, like I'm just thinking, you know, coral is a plant, right?
If you could only be a fish.
Okay. Anyway, I liked what he said about, you know, the fable about the story, clearing that up, that the guy, you know, wasn't pining after some woman, because I knew he was going to say that, and I'm glad, because I know a couple guys that are like these little geniuses, these little 100-pound guys that are friends of mine, that people go to all the time to ask hard questions that are kind of like savants, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, you keep saying the guy must have been lonely or whatever, but I don't think so. I think that you know, he just wanted to be left alone and do his work, and he knew that if he
didn't need people around him.
I think that if he, you know, he wasn't a dummy, and he realized that if he said, "Hey, I know anti-gravity secrets," if he, you know, he would have ruined his life. And then to I wanted to say something to RL.
RL's listening.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yes. You know, I hope you look into this and come back and tell us more secrets. Find out more discredit or whatever that Spica thing underneath the sign. You know, why would he leave it, bam, right there? You know,
maybe that's where they came from.
There you go. See what I mean? It goes all over the place.
Yep, it sure
does. Yeah, and what about torsion? You know anything about that?
Torsion? What do you think?
Oh,
that's physics for you.
Yep. And magnetic torsion field.
That's right.
I think that has a lot to do with the celestial alignments and the magnetosphere of the Earth, because the Earth is a large toroid with a large torsion magnetic field. When you have sphere magnets with their torsion fields and you have them all lined up in a row, like the celestial alignments he shows on the constellation wall, it starts to become pretty apparent that he was interested in torsion fields and the manipulation of them.
He was he a perplexing person?
I think he was fascinating. It was like he was good at everything. I read a story in Rusty McClure's book where he fixed he had a wristwatch that he liked, and the spring broke inside the watch.
And he knew how to work on that. Yeah.
He fixed the watch with such accuracy. He said, a watchmaker looked at it and said, I wouldn't have done it this way. He did it kind of a janky way.
Yeah.
But it's perfect. It works and it's perfect. And he fixed it as well as you can with nothing. You know, he was meticulous and thorough and detail oriented and highly observant and very sensitive, I think. And I think that was the source of his isolation, was he was so sensitive that he had to be shut off from the world.
Let's go to Clay in Miami, Florida. Hello, Clay. Good morning.
George and RL, how y'all doing?
Fine, thank you.
Good morning.
You know, I know you don't believe in coincidences, but the very first Coast show I ever listened to was about the Coral Castle with Joe Bullard.
Yep.
And I've been hooked ever since. I was just down there with my wife Saturday at Coral Castle.
What did you think of it?
I've been going there off and on since the early 60s. I went there for the first time on a field trip in, I guess, about third or fourth grade. And this was back in, you know, the early 60s. And I've been fascinated ever since then. And there's just some really, really amazing things there. Like, RL, did you notice the big old door in the back that no longer works?
Oh, the 9-ton gate.
Yes.
Yes.
The 9-ton gate?
Yeah, it's a 9-ton gate that, when it worked in its heyday, a toddler could push it open with one hand.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. It's on an axle. I think they said it was built from an old Model A, the axle. And back then, we were just little kids. The guy giving the tour picked out one of the little girls in our class and said, poke that with your finger. And when she did, that door swung open.
Oh.
Unbelievable. 9-ton gate, and it swung open.
With a finger. A little girl's push of a finger.
Yeah.
Wow.
With a push of a finger. And I've been going there off and on for 50-something years, and I tell you, I'm just amazed every time I go there. It's just always something new.
How do you think, Clay, he did this?
Well, you know, every time I go there, I mull that over, and it's just, you know, it makes me think of maybe the magnetic thing, radio frequencies, and the sound levitation. Who knows? But it's just, there's no way this little guy, and they have a cutout of him, a life-size cutout of him. He's 5 foot, 100 pounds. He doesn't look like he can swing a hammer, let alone lift any of these stones.
How do we know he wasn't an extraterrestrial and his buddies helped him, huh?
I'm open to anything, because when you go there and see with your own eyes, it's amazing.
All right. Hey, thanks. We're almost out of time. We've got a minute left. all kinds of possibilities, R.L. You know, if this were a court hearing and you present the evidence, anything could happen, huh?
This is true. This is true. And until we find the answer, this mystery, I think, is going to get a lot deeper before it gets solved. And I am very honored and grateful to just be able to contribute anything to the field of knowledge in this area of research.
Tell us about your YouTube channel one more time, how they can find it.
Sure. If you go to youtube.com/user/talkingtoleadskalnin, or you click on the link that's on Coast to Coast AM under my name, you can watch my videos on these subjects and see my discoveries for yourself and subscribe to my page and be on the lookout for my upcoming book.
The next time you go there, you've got to call in live on the program at night. Wouldn't that be cool?
You have a deal.
That would be exciting. And then you could walk around to kind of describe what you're looking at.
Yes, let me give you my tour of the Coral Castle, as I understand.
Yeah, that would be great. R.L., thanks.
I would love that.
You keep in touch. Let us know when the book is done, and we'll talk with you again. Fascinating subject. I love it when things like that are happening on the planet. They're great mysteries. For Dan Galante, Donna Walker, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.